Show that Senators Kelly, Rieger, and Sharp are present. First bill we hear today is committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 320, sponsored by Senator Lehman. Senator Lehman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 320 deals with some revisions to the statutes regarding architects, engineers, and land surveyors. This is an issue that was brought to me by the Board of Registration. There are a number of issues in the bill. They're relatively minor and mostly housekeeping. I could go through them point by point, but I think better than that, we have the chairman of the Board of Registration with us today. That's George Davidson from Juneau, and I just suggest that we bring him to the table. We can go through if you have any particular questions on any of the sections. Be happy to have him address those. I know that you're pushed for time. I do want to note that I have proposed three amendments since the bill was originally introduced, and we have drafted a committee substitute that I believe is in your packets. The first one is the proposal to delete Section 1 from the bill. As we looked into it and realized that the impact on changing terms where it comes out of the statutes will change other boards besides this particular board and affects 30 or 40 other boards, if my memory serves me correctly. I didn't want to get into that issue this year with this bill, so I suggest taking it out. And the other one is Section 3 in the original bill. I recommend that we remove that, and that's requiring the governor remove a member only for misconduct. That's an issue that I likewise didn't want to get into with this bill. It could create a considerable amount of controversy. I didn't want to do that. And I think the remaining issues are relatively minor and non-controversial. Section 8 in the original bill, in the CS, there's a change in the definition of the term practice of land surveying. It reflects some recent board action. And the new definition is the definition that the board has recently passed regarding the practice of land surveying. So I commend the committee substitute to you and suggest that if you do have, well, I'd be happy to answer questions, or if you have any particular questions about the whys of some of the other changes, that Mr. Davidson would be here and be happy to testify. And I also understand that Pat Callan is either online or is willing to be online from Fairbanks. He's the land surveyor who has proposed some of the changes specifically regarding land surveying.
Senator, what education requirements are required to be a land surveyor?
There are several, and I just saw the book, and maybe Mr. Davidson could bring the book and respond to that. You could have zero education and with 8 years of experience, you could be qualified to take the exam to be a land surveyor. If you have 4 years of education, then you only would need 4 years of experience to take the exam. So there's no minimum amount of education currently required. You can replace the education with work experience.
On the proposed committee substitute on page 2, section 4, says AS 0848321 is amended to read. I don't understand where the amendment is in that particular section. I don't see an amendment there. That been repealed and reenacted, or
there's an or on line 21, Senator.
Pardon?
On line 21, the addition of a word or.
Oh. I got it.
Yeah, that the only change was there. The board felt that it'd make it easier to follow through if they just insert the word or.
Okay. So any questions? Senator Rieger.
Well, I just I'm curious, when you have on the last section of the bill the definition of the practice of land surveying, I'll assume that that triggers something, that if you're engaged in the practice of land surveying, you're subject to some kind of, I don't know what, but I assume it's some kind of oversight by the board, and I don't know what all else, or maybe you're precluded from doing certain things unless you're certified by the board. And I'm curious about that first one that's mentions the teaching of land surveying courses at an institution of higher learning. I'm just curious what this all does as far as the person's ability, person's ability to teach, or secondly, a university's ability to recruit the person of their choice to teach a particular course that's involved in land surveying.
I could have Mr. Davidson or Mr. Callan address specifically why that, but I can go back to several years ago when he had another bill regarding the teaching of engineering, of higher level courses of engineering. And the reason for including this was to allow the people who do this, who teach, to count that work experience toward the work that would allow them to qualify to take the exam. And so you have a professor or associate professor teaching these courses and arguably is doing much of what somebody is doing in the field, but they wouldn't be able to count that otherwise for their work experience.
Okay, I follow.
Other questions? Okay, George Davidson.
Senator Kelly, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. My name is George Davidson.
George, can I interrupt for 1 second?
Yes.
We have two bills to hear today prior to 185, which I think most of the crowd is here for, 320 and 256. Let's assume that these bills are going to take 45 minutes, so why don't we say we will be hearing 185 at 2:30, all right? So there's no sense everybody sitting around for these if you're here for 185. You're welcome, David. Go ahead, Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Senator. I understood that you were in a bit of a bind today for time, so I took the liberty of bringing copies of a letter which I sent to Senator Lehman, which I will leave with you folks if you'd like, which basically outlines the board's position. What I failed to tell you is that I'm the chairman of the AELS board, and here at their
wait
request.
A moment. It's real difficult to hear. Wait till the noise dies down a bit.
That's yours. Sorry about that. You don't want to hear me, too?
That's not why you're here.
Go ahead.
Okay. The bill that was originally submitted covered, as Senator Lehman said, basically a lot of housekeeping bills, but also addressed some issues that the board was concerned about. The board is experiencing difficulty with longevity or continuity. Our board represents approximately 5,000 engineers, architects, and land surveyors in the state. And I am, for all intents and purposes, the senior member of the board, and I've been on the board less than 4 years. So our historic memory to be able to respond the same this year as the boards were responding to applicants a few years ago is being lost. That's further compounded by the fact that the board is only served by one state employee. That particular person, of course, has worked very hard with the number of registrants that we have. And so that position has also turned over 4 times in the 4 years that I've been here. So the reason for the Section 1 in the original bill about appointments and terms was an effort of the board's to suggest that maybe in a small way we could increase the term of participants on the board so that we'd have a little more historic memory. I understand that that'll be deleted from the committee substitute, but I would encourage the group to consider that as an alternate. It still would limit a board member to a maximum of just under 10 years, which is not an excessive period of time. For example, what you have right now, if a board member should happen to resign as of this period and their term is up in July, the new appointment would really be on the board for only 4 years, for all intents and purposes. And the regulations and everything are involved enough that it takes several years to get up to speed. So we would encourage you to consider a method, whether it be the one that we propose or not, for allowing some board members to stay longer on the boards. The other items that are in the bill, as Senator Lehman had said, are somewhat housekeeping in nature. In the interest of time, I don't know if you want me to go through them in one by one. The board does approve the bill as written.
Yeah, I think we should probably go through them.
Okay.
I have a question first.
Senator Salo, and would the record please show that Senators Salo and Lincoln are present?
My question is, I'm looking at where you changed the composition of the board from who it is, but I don't see where you, what part of the bill changes the time limit?
Changes the what? I'm sorry.
The limitation of terms.
Oh, it's not in the proposed committee substitute, Senator. There was a proposal in the original bill that was taken out of the proposed committee substitute, and you are recommended a different approach. Is that where we are, George?
That's correct. Yeah. We had proposed that that if a person served less than 2 years of an unexpired or of a four-year term, that not be considered as a full term, and that they be allowed to serve for a full 2 years. If they serve more than 2 years, then that would be considered a full term, in which case they would only be allowed to serve, say, 6 years.
Okay. Thanks.
But that's not in the committee substitute. Yeah. The makeup of the board, as it's presently outlined, requires that one of the engineers that are appointed would be a mining engineer. The board has had difficulty in filling that position. It's presently filled by Phil Holdsworth, and we all know Phil, and he's a longtime mining engineer. The board discussed this, and it was with Phil's concurrence that the board thought the state would be better served because of the change in the state, that instead of requiring two engineers from General and one mining engineer, that we propose that to be three engineers to be appointed at the choice of the governor. This would allow the governor to appoint a petroleum engineer or appoint more mechanical or electrical engineers, and it would also allow him to appoint a mining engineer if he saw fit. But it would give the governor more flexibility in the appointment of that position. And we think it would better reflect the work effort in the state as is now reflected by the engineering profession. Section 3 on the original bill, removal of members, we were proposing the word only, that a member be removed only for misconduct. The only reason for that, again, was an effort to try to let the board members build up some historic memory as they served the public. General requirements for qualifications for registration. In Section 4 of the original bill, proposed the deletion of the words, however, an applicant for registration as a land surveyor may not be required to submit evidence of more than 8 years of any combination of education, experience, or training. This is in statute, and the intent is if this bill passes with that language in there, then there would be a regulation change to the statutes or to the regulations, which would allow or require 12 years of experience for registration as a land surveyor. This comes at the request of the land surveyors, and it would make it consistent with the requirements for an engineer. The present time, if you have no education experience, your registration as a land surveyor could take place after 8 years. And with the change in technology and survey, and the board also felt that more experience in the field with the new forms of surveying was a good approach. In section 5, this is strictly a housekeeping. We're proposing the deletion of some language which was put in years ago when the National Council of Engineers Examiners was proposing another method for registration. That form of alternate registration never took place, and the words mean nothing in the law, so that we're just cleaning that up. In Section 6, evidence of practice, the only change there is the addition of the word or between paragraph 2 and paragraph 3. That comes at the request of the Attorney General's office. Without the or in there, they are finding that people are able to might say sneak through because they don't meet all the terms of both the paragraphs, and the intent was that these would be separate criteria for evaluating evidence of practice, and so the or clarifies that they are in separate requirements. The exemption paragraph basically goes to the item 9, and this came at the request of, again, the surveyors and the survey professors at the University of Anchorage, that post-secondary education, the teaching of land surveying would not be exempt, and that if you teach land surveying in the university, why then you would also be required to be registered. And that is, as Senator Lehman has said, that is a two-edged sword. It not only increases the requirements and what we feel is the quality of the service that you get through the school, but it also allows those that are teaching to get credit for their education to apply towards their license training.
I don't understand how they can be teaching if they're not licensed.
But you're allowed to work under the direction of other registered people. See, just like, I'm sorry.
Sure, Sheriff. As I recall, in the past, several years ago, that was a problem because to bring people in from outside that wasn't registered in Alaska, they couldn't teach until they were licensed, so that there was some kind of delay involved. And the university was having a real problem with that.
At that particular proposal, and that was just about the time I was getting on the board, was for all professors in engineering, architecture, land surveying, to have that as a requirement. That did not go over well with the university. They felt it restricted their ability to recruit. This does not apply to the engineers. This would apply only to the surveyors, and it was coming at the request of the survey department at the university, so the board felt that it would be appropriate to present it.
What's the additional language now that allows you to go underground? I thought I knew what a land surveyor did, but why are we adding the language within underground workings on beds of bodies of water?
I believe that's just so that any line and grade, whether it be for like an outfall line or whether it be for sewer lines or whatever, any survey in lines, whether it be below the ground, in water or in the air, would be permitted for a surveyor to do.
Who's done underground before? Did you have to be a certified mining engineer or something to be doing that?
No, sir. Civil engineers have done it, and land surveyors have done it. Some of this resulted from, I guess, some of the boroughs starting to enforce the exact letter rather than the practice that has been going on, and the surveyors in. Found that they were having trouble with some of the requirements, and I think it came out of Fairbanks, for subdivision work and other types of work. And so this was their proposal. I believe when the next participant, Pat Callan from Fairbanks, who is a land surveyor and has been instrumental in dealing with the board in this, I believe he'll be able to respond more specifically and give you examples of why they proposed that.
Senator Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This whole Section 6 bothers me because although I can see where adding these new descriptions to the practice of land surveying might broaden the scope of practice and they all might make sense, they also, you know, have the flip side that anyone who is not registered as a land surveyor is prohibited from doing any of these things unless they fall into the exceptions. And I think it goes back to Senator Sharp's question about the university. But it could be on any of these other issues here, too. And I looked up in the statute, and 0848-281 says prohibited practice. You know, you can't engage in any of these unless you're registered. So everything we add, we're forcing registration, as I read it.
Well, Senator, if I could respond. Yeah. I believe the exemptions that are listed prior are to, in Section 4, I believe it is, no, in Section 5 of the committee substitute, are intended to protect those normal practices that are done by contractors and that. And the language here, I don't believe, encompasses more work than what is currently being done by the surveyors. It merely makes their efforts legal, shall we say.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to debate the witness, but I thought your testimony just said that civil engineers were doing some of these things as well as registered land surveyors. And as I read this, now civil engineers can't do them anymore. Got to be a land surveyor doing it.
I don't believe so. I think civil engineers, under their profession, still can do construction surveying.
It says, you know, a person may not practice land surveying in the state unless that person is registering. You know, I'm kind of reading 48281.
Okay, why don't we come back to that question,
okay.
Senator Rieger, and George, we'll hear from Mr. Erickson, and if you'll stand by, we'd appreciate it. Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rick Erickson with Teamsters Local 959 and Technical Engineers Local 959. I was going to have our expert, I thought, come and testify today, but he's in negotiations, so I had him write out comments that are directed only towards Section 4 of the bill, nothing else. So if I could pass these out or make them available. Anyway, actually, I better keep one for myself. If I might, I might.
Section 2 and a committee substitute.
If you don't mind, I'd just read his comments. Like I said, it's directed only towards Section 4, the general requirements and qualifications for registration. Dear Senator Kelly and committee members, this testimony will address concerns we have over Senate Bill 320, in particular AS 08.48.4171 on page 2, lines 13 through 16. The deletion of these four lines in the current statute will negatively affect some of our technical engineers, our term for surveyors, not land surveyors, but construction type surveyors. I would first like to introduce myself and my organization, then to specify the damage that may be done. I'm the business representative for Technical Engineers of Alaska, affiliated with Teamsters Local 959. Represent approximately 150 construction surveyors statewide. 23 of our members are registered land surveyors in the state of Alaska. Throughout the years, our members have enjoyed employment on projects throughout the state. The nature of the majority of these projects require working away from home. If a technical engineer wishes to test for a license as a surveyor, meaning a land surveyor, he must be able to submit evidence of more than 8 years of any combination of education, experience, or training. 3 years of this experience must be in responsible control of an operation related to land surveying. Operations of a construction survey nature do not count towards this 3 years requirement. In essence, a technical engineer must leave the construction survey projects and spend at least three years land surveying. Historically, 5 years of surveying on construction projects have given our applicants enough technical experience to pass the non-legal parts of the examination. Most have had to utilize courses at the university to help them pass the legal questions put forth in the exam. While it would be acceptable to substitute a four-year degree for the experience, this is often an unsuitable choice due to reasons of finance, tuition and supporting families, and location, which quite often our work takes us away from this commuting distance to campus. We are of the understanding that if the 8 years is struck from the statute, then regulations requiring 12 years will be promulgated. We are convinced that adding 4 more years of experience in order to take the examination is unreasonable and acts as a restraint on our members who wish to become licensed. If 5 years experience in the construction surveying does not enable you to have minimum qualifications, which is all the passing the examination purports to guarantee, it is unlikely that 9 years would improve your qualifications. Either you can grasp the fundamental technical aspects of surveying or you cannot, and surely the answer cannot can be found within the current 8-year requirement, 3 years responsible control and 5 years of other experience. We ask that this statute remain as it's currently written. As technical engineers, sincerely, Michael Kennedy is our business representative. I can answer questions if you have any. I will tell you, though, that I'll make this caveat. Although I've worked with and around surveyors for about 30 years in the construction industry, Talking to him is much like talking to, I hope I don't insult any computer programmers, but it's a lot like talking to them. They have a whole new language, different language, and a different way of speaking, which suits them fine, but sometimes it leaves me out in the field somewhere. But I could ask some questions, I'm sure. If not, I can...
So at the very bottom of the first page of your testimony, it says, we are under the understanding that if 8 years is struck, then regulations requiring 12 years will be promulgated. Is that something that's, I mean, what's the basis for that?
I think Mr. Davidson just alluded to that, but this fellow, Mike Kinney, he went and talked to fellows in Fairbanks now that's going to be testifying. Yeah, I think he talked to him and also to instructor at the University of Alaska and several other people in the field and were on the board, and they told him that this is what was probably going to happen. It was going to go from 8 years to regulations making it 12 years.
Maybe Mr.
That's where that came from. Nothing official from Senator Lehman's office.
I just want to note that Pat Callan is not on the board right now, so he couldn't have been speaking before the board, but he is a past board member.
Okay. Senator Rieger?
Maybe that was part of Mr. Davidson's testimony. I just didn't hear it.
Did Mr. Davidson, did you indicate that there's an idea afloat to promulgulate?
We'll hear any of the testimony.
Did you indicate that there was an idea afloat to promulgulate regulations requiring 12 years of experience instead of 8?
That is the purpose of that amendment, yes, sir. The in the regulations, there's a chart of requirements before registration for engineers, architects, and land surveyors. And in that chart, the current chart says if you have no education experience, then the experience requirements before the exam would be 8 years. The intent of this was that if this amendment passes, then we would propose, and there would be public hearings on it, but we would propose that this would then change from 8 years to 12 years.
Who would propose this? The board would?
Be through the state. You
know. Which, of course, would make it more difficult for people to enter your profession, right?
If they don't have education. If they have education, they'd still...
Or 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Is Fairbanks on the line?
Yes, Fairbanks is online.
Okay, Patrick Callan, is he available?
I pushed it. Oh, yes, I'm right here.
Go ahead, Mr. Callan.
Okay, let me address two issues. First, on the definition of land surveying, that's whether that poses any conflict between the land surveyors and the engineers. That has been raised as an issue. It disappears if you have the definition of the practice of engineering out at the same time, which allows for engineering surveys. All it means is that's a gray area, a crossover area where both engineers and land surveyors may do the same thing. The primary effect to adding lines, angles, elevations, natural man-made features to the definition of land surveying would be to make it clear that we can certify to the accuracy of the measurements that we take. We don't think it would limit anybody from taking those kind of measurements for their own use. They just wouldn't be able to use them, say, in a court hearing. This came up. This came from the Matsu Valley. Actually, it was proposed by a land surveyor who'd had difficulty in testifying to the accuracy of measurements, and equal weight was given to the testimony of a realtor for measurements, which he thought was not quite right. The other issue that I hear some debate about is over this 8-year limitation in statute. The land surveyors have asked for this. There's some things that are quite different today than when the land surveyors were separated from engineering as a practice, and that is that we now have a 4-year degree program available to us in Alaska, while at the same time as surveying has become a great deal more complicated than it used to be. Degree programs are of have been instituted in about a dozen states by now. We're not the first to head in that direction. The land surveyors have asked the Board of Registration to give credit to our degree by requiring that people that we gradually embark on a changeover to where somebody would have to have the degree to become a land surveyor. However, we have recognized that there still should be a route available to for people who were unable to get the degree, and we wanted to use the same rules as the civil engineers do, with where they allow somebody to sit for the professional engineer exam if they provide 12 years of experience.
Excuse me, Mr. Callan. Mr. Callan, are you saying now that you have to get a degree to be a land surveyor?
No, I'm not. But I'd say that we have a degree program, and we are moving. We are interested in moving in the direction of legitimizing that degree and making it part of the requirement toward becoming a land surveyor. That's correct. But we can't take a single step toward legitimizing that 4-year degree. As long as there's a limitation in statute that makes it impossible for the Board of Registration to recognize education, to formally recognize education.
But you're not asking for that, of course.
I believe I did hear stated, and it is correct, that construction surveying isn't land surveying and is theoretically not supposed to be counted toward land surveying experience. That is one of the biggest problems that people on the Board of Registration have to wrestle with in evaluating applicants, is that construction surveying isn't land surveying. We think that we might actually make it easier for some of the people who do engage in construction surveying should they take advantage of the schooling that's available and get a degree that would count toward their registration. So in some ways, we think we're actually providing a better route. But the bottom line is that surveying is becoming much more complicated than it was when this 8-year limitation was put in the statute. And we think this is the right direction to go, and we hope that the committee can adopt it.
Yeah, I don't read in here where going to college for 4 years qualifies as experience. Where am I missing that? Is that in regulation?
That's correct. Both the land surveyors are set apart from the architects and the engineers in having their experience mentioned in statute at all. For the most part, the Board of Registration deals with matters such as experience by regulation.
Does it specifically say in regulation that if you go to college, you get a degree, that counts as towards your 8 years?
Within the table of experience,
it does do that.
Is an option. It's an equal option to field experience.
Okay.
And the surveyors, as a group, feel that that's wrong for the education to not have any more count any more than working on a survey crew, say.
Okay. All right. Any questions, Senator Rieger?
I'm wondering why, by regulation, the board can count education towards the experience necessary, but can't count teaching of surveying courses at an institution of higher learning as experience towards the required time.
They didn't. I think that is just a holdover from at the time that land surveying was split from engineering. There wasn't really a college of surveying, and it just wasn't thought of, but you're aware that both architects and engineers have in their definition that teaching is considered experience. I think it's just an oversight.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bill Mendenhall, did you wish to testify?
Yes, I'm from Fairbanks. I'm a current land surveyor member of the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. I recently replaced Mr. Callan, who has been testifying here. And I would like to back up his statements. We worked very closely with the Alaska Society of Professional Land Surveyors, and all of them felt that there should be more, a greater emphasis on education, formal education. This also follows the national trend. Some states require that people have four-year Bachelor of Surveying degrees. They've just adopted this in the last year or two. And we set upon an idea of having, we urge people to get more formal education, but we would not require there to be another way out. We have a proposed schedule of experience that would be in the Alaska Administrative Code in the AAC and the regulations. And basically, it would say that if someone has a four-year degree in surveying plus four more years of experience, the person could be eligible to take the exam. If a person had a two-year surveying degree, such as the Associate of Arts degree at Anchorage or elsewhere in the United States, but a two-year associate degree, and 8 years of experience for a total of 10, that person could take the exam. But if a person had no formal education, then the person would have to have 12 years of experience to take the exam. Of course, the way the law is presently written, you can't do that, because about 10 years ago, somehow in the law, for land surveyors only, not for engineers or architects, it said that no surveyor, land surveyor, has to submit more than 8 years total experience in education. And we feel we're trying to upgrade that, give a little higher status and requirements for surveying. And we thought this was the way to go, and this has been checked out with many, many people, and as I say, is endorsed by the Alaska Society of Professional Land Surveyors. And remember that a person with no formal education still has the option to take the exam, just requires more experience. This was patterned exactly after the requirements for professional engineers. In the state of Alaska, a person with a bachelor's, a four-year degree in surveying of any sort, and 4 years of experience may sit for the exam. A person with 5 years of education or more, for example, master's degree or more, and 3 years experience may sit for the exam. A person with no formal education in engineering has to have 12 years of experience to sit for the exam. We're just trying to apply the same rules to the land surveyors as has long been applied to the professional engineer category. And I'll close with that.
Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little confused here. Under Section 2 of the CS, we're taking out the requirement of the 8 years of experience with any combination. That's being deleted. And then leaving in here that this evidence would be, shall submit evidence satisfactory to the board on education, training, and experience. And in the previous testimony, if this is the section that speaks to where the 8 years being struck from the statute, then the 12 years would, in regulation, then be in place. Are you saying then that it would be the 12 years, where we take out the 8 years, then 12 years will be put in that place?
This is Bill Mendenhall. I assume the question was to me. Before that could be done, that might be the intent, but before that could be done, there would have to be hearings on the administrative regulations. And I can't really state what would happen. That's kind of a desire that many of the members of the board had. It was the desire of the Alaska Society of Professional Land Surveyors. However, changes in the AAC can't occur until we've had hearings and testimony on it. All we're saying is that the present Alaska statute says surveyors can't be required to submit can't be required to have more than 8 years combination of education and experience. And we'd like that removed so it gives us the occasion to strengthen the requirements in the future. But this act, this proposed legislation would not do it. It would just make it possible to be done through the administrative code after the proper hearings.
It just seems that it's real ambiguous that it just leaves it to the satisfactory of the board, and so that it's a determination that would be made at a later time. It doesn't speak to exactly what the number of years, whether it's, as you pointed out, the degree, higher education, or experience, and it just leaves it hanging there.
Well, if I may just reply, regulations regarding the engineers and the architects are also, right now, as you say, hanging there. That is, they're not in the legislation. And that would have to be decided at AAC, regulation, administrative regulation level. All we're saying is we can't even consider it as long as this wording is in the Alaska statute for, at any rate, in Senate Bill 320.
Further testimony on this bill? Okay, we'll ask staff to go to work on it and bring it back to committee at a later date. Okay, Senate Bill 356. Do we have to get Mike Navarre?
I thought this bill passed last year. Thank you for having a softball.
I thought it did too. I don't know why it's back.
Okay. Okay, committee. We have a proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill number 356, an act excluding certain sports officials and certain recreational activities sanctioned by an employer from coverage provided under workers' comp and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Josh Fink, aide to Senator Kelly, the chairman of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Before you is a work draft CS, and briefly it does two things. Section 1. Would exempt amateur sports officials employed on a contractual basis from workers' compensation coverage. Section 2 would remove employers from workers' compensation liability for their employees if their employees are voluntarily participating in a recreational activity sponsored by the employer. This bill is sort of a combination of two bills on the House side. Section 1's House Bill 290, and Section 2 is Representative Navarre's House Bill 302. I can go ahead and address Section 1 until Representative Navarre is here to address Section 2, if that's all right with you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Section 1, this arose out of a situation in Anchorage. Prior to 1992, the Anchorage Sports Association considered its umpires, referees, timekeepers, etc., they weren't employees. They were hired on a contractual basis to provide services during the summer. Then in the fall of 1992, the Anchorage Association's insurance carrier came in, did an audit, and said, wait a minute, these guys are employees of yours, and you've got workers' comp premiums. The Anchorage Association contested that, went to the Division of Insurance. The Division of Insurance backed up the insurance carrier. Under the way current state law is written, they, in fact, would be considered employees. The NCCI, which is the National Council on Compensation Insurance, sets the rates. Then gave a classification of these amateur sports officials of extremely high risk, that of a professional athlete. And the end result of that is that they're paying between 17 and they would have to pay between 17 and 54% of their compensation to these officials in workers' compensation. The Anchorage Sports Association appealed to the National Council on Compensation Insurance to take another look at that and possibly reclassify. The only classifications available to them were contact sports and non-contact sports. Neither of them really got the rates down. They asked for a ranking of groundskeeper to get it down to about 3%. That was denied. They have since appealed to the Attorney General's office and had a hearing. A decision is pending. However, I will say, in the number of people I have spoken with, none of them are very optimistic that they're going to get a favorable result from that because of the way current law is written. It simply doesn't provide for them to do that.
For the information in the committee, these officials were talking about, you know, normally moonlighting. They normally have a real job and they get $15 a game or $20 a game.
So this, Mr. Chairman, would simply exempt amateur sports officials if they are performing their services for a team that doesn't receive compensation. And it basically is going to keep these sports associations in business. There are a number of Anchorage Sports Association and other associations throughout the state have written us and are saying they simply can't afford to continue an operation if they've got to pay this kind of workers' comp. And that is Section 1. I can address Section 2 unless Representative Navarre.
Well, why don't you give it a shot since we're waiting for Representative... Oh, here he is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, I'm Mike Navarre, representing District 9 in the legislature. I just got a copy of the draft, and I was hoping I wouldn't have to explain Section 1 of the bill, the new Section 1, but I'm happy to explain Section 2, which was the thrust of my bill on the House side. And all this does is change the definitions section of the workers' comp statute, and it arose out of a case where someone who was playing softball on the courts ruled that if the company that you're working for pays fees to the league, which rents fields, then that field is included or counts as a employer-provided field, and then would subject the worker if they were injured to workers' comp claims. And all this does is change that, so change the definition section so that it does not include recreational activities unless it's at a remote job site or actually on employer's premises. And it would provide for, see, what the bill does is raise a concern by a lot of sponsors of recreational softball leagues that if their employees happen to play on the team that they sponsor, even if the team is not comprised of just people who work for them, if it's a team that just a couple of, like Arby's, for example, sponsors a softball team in Kenai, and if one of our employees played on the softball team and got injured, we would have to pay workers' comp for them, even though we don't require them to play on the team or anything, just because of the fact that we pay the fees that rent the field, it counts as a field that's provided by the employer.
So in your particular case, you won't let anybody that works for Arby's play on the team?
Well, not only that, we may not sponsor a team because the way that teams are generally sponsored in a lot of cases is someone from the company says, you know, let's get a team together and gets the company or a business to sponsor it. And, you know, that's what generally happens is one of our employees, my brother or sister, says we want to have a sponsor softball team. And
we have other people to testify, but is there any reason to, or is the committee satisfied with the test, Senator?
Well, I just have one question. So to clarify this, if you don't want to hold the softball game in Arby's front lot, right, even under this bill, you'd still have a liability problem?
Right. Well, if we provided the field on our property, then it would count we would have to pay. But the courts have interpreted to say that if we pay fees to the league and then the league rents the field, that counts as an Arby's field if one of our players who works for us gets injured on that field.
And I'm interested in at a remote job site. So if, and often this occurs, if there is a construction crew that's out in one of the communities, small communities, and they get together a baseball group and they play at the job site, they're liable?
Then they would be eligible for workers' comp claims, yes.
and...
Because they've got nothing else to do, nowhere else
right,
to go.
That's part of the job, is the recreation provided as part of the job activity.
Labor unions don't object to that, correct?
No. That's the way it is.
I wouldn't think they would.
No, not on this remote site provision. There might be another one. Senator Rieger.
I'm ready to move the bill if you are.
Any objections, Senator Rieger?
I'd move that we report out.
Let me just ask this. In Anchorage, Mr. Ben Esch, were you in favor of the bill, Mr. Esch?
Yes, Chairman Kelly. I'm the attorney for the Anchorage Sports Association.
Okay, you've said enough.
We are 100% behind the bill. We think this will make a big impact and help the availability of recreational sports throughout the state.
Thank you. Senator Rieger.
I move that we report out. First, I move that we adopt the CS for SB 356. Version E, and I move we report the same out with individual recommendations.
Without objection, the bill leaves committee. We will start Senate Bill 185 in 3 minutes.